Welcome to Gruesomely Gorgeous. I'm your host, Taylor Wells. Joining me, my fellow narrator, Crystal Nail. All of our stories are researched by our criminal justice expert, Caitlin Brandt. Together, we are Gruesomely Gorgeous. I am your host, Taylor Wells. This week, we are going to be talking about the Muffin Man. Do you know the Muffin Man, the Muffin Man, the Muffin Man? Do you know the Muffin Man who lives on Drury Lane? The Drury Lane Dicer, also known as the Muffin Man. He was the first known serial killer in England. He lived from 1563 to 1612. His name was Frederick Thomas Linwood. He would make home bread deliveries, much like the milkman would make milk deliveries in the 1950s. Along his route, he would often see children at home. This period of time was also known as the Renaissance, and if you remember anything from school, you know that times were very hard on people back then, and most people were starving. So this man, the Drury Lane Dicer, would tie a muffin to a string and playfully lure kids away from their house. He would use wooden spoons to knock the kids out and take them back to his home. He didn't just kill them, but he would torture and then kill them. Between 1589 and 1598, he killed and tortured 15 children. The Muffin Man song was then created to keep kids away from his bakery and not to fall into his trap.
Good evening, all you gorgeously gruesome ghoulies and ghouls. It's Crystal here. The Muffin Man, fact or fiction? Do you know the Muffin Man who lives on Drury Lane? Some did, and didn't live long enough to tell their tale. Many stories surround him, from making his scrumptious muffins out of parts of his victims, to luring his victims by tying a string around a muffin and pulling it down an old cobble road where their doom awaits them. Fact or fiction, we'll leave that for you to decide. Until then, good night.
I guess local legends are legends for a reason. What's the creepiest story you have in your local area? Reddit user Not Another Whatever said, "Not that long ago, a man killed his wife and children, put them all in bed, and set the house on fire. When the neighbor saw the house on fire, he ran to get the children out and found them all dead, soaking wet from being drowned in the tub, tucked in their beds. The man had drowned all their children and shot the wife after losing his job. It was a huge impact on the first responders and the neighbor. I remember him being this really happy, funny guy, and then just overnight, that person was gone. When my sister was in high school, a girl moved into our town from out of state. She lived in that house for a few weeks before she started telling my sister about the wet ghost girl and the wet kids that were in her room. She said they'd sit on the bed or drip on the floor, and she didn't like them. She was terrified people would think she was crazy. but also just couldn't stay in the house. They didn't stay in that house for long, nor did the next family to move in. Naptastic has a local story. They said, this is getting forgotten, but in the 1950s or 60s, some guy ran a big group home for mentally disabled people who were given up by their families. The government paid him their social security. They lived in pretty neglected conditions. Whenever one of them died, he would bury them in the dirt floor basement and not tell anyone so he could keep the money. There were some dozen bodies down there, but he ran away during the investigation and lives in Ireland now. Nothing ever happened to him. I drive by the house a lot while working, and it gives me the heebs. I wonder if the current tenants know what happened. Million Words of Crap says, I live near Bethesda Cemetery in Tennessee, which was the site of a Civil War hospital. It was a neutral hospital, meaning both Union and Confederate soldiers were treated there, sometimes buried unidentified. As a result, the place is supposed to be full of ghosts. The Confederates lingering there will allegedly harass you if you have a northern accent. And there's a woman crying who can be heard wailing at the far edge of the cemetery at night. The Dank Drake said, my great-grandpa's house. Anyone who was left alone in that house would suddenly die for no reason. The place was soon abandoned with everything left behind in an instant. But my dad in his teenage years would look at that place often, and sometimes bizarre things would seem to happen. My favorite story is the one with the albino boar that would somehow cover every exit. In high school, my dad brought some friends, including my mom, to the place, and everything seemed different about it. All the plants surrounding the house died, but the house itself was a garden. After they went inside, nothing had seemed wrong, but suddenly, brown recluse spiders came down from above. Everybody ran off to drive away, and rumors spread like wildfire. My parents have been long divorced, and I asked my mom if this was actually true, and she had confirmed with some more to the story. The very small town, and they burned the place to the ground when the rumor hit the right people. My dad had just gotten off of school and decided to go see the house again. He went inside the living room, where some old pictures had been. The place was just never the same with every visit, so he decided to leave, but was faced by a mysterious albino boar in the front yard field, staring down the exit. He turned around to face the backyard door, but it was the same boar in the field, staring down the exit with an attack stance. My dad closed the doors and went upstairs to find a certain window with a ladder outside and saw the boar circling the house. He'd gotten out when the boar was out of sight and ran for the hills, but that boar was faster. The boar chased my dad into a tree where my dad had hidden for a while. Boars can't look up. Hours had passed before my grandma and her dad had decided to look for my dad. And my grandma, as crazy as she was, and she was ready to beat the shit out of that boar. My dad was always faced by some threat in that house, and I wonder why he would always go back. Luckily, my grandma got him away safely. The Lady in the Woods, 1987 to 2012. All names have been changed. The following story is 100% true. The years listed above are estimated dates that the story roamed free for me. It was the only time in my entire life that I had ever questioned my own sanity and or my own perceptions. I ask that you read the story in full, as this is one of those few cases where there is an actual ending to the story. I'm writing this today because I believe the story is one that we can learn from. The location is a mid-sized city located roughly 2.5 hours southwest of Chicago. The town sits right on the Mississippi River, bordering the state of Iowa. The Lady in the Woods was sighted at a small park, smack dab in the middle of town. The park is surrounded by roughly 4 to 5 acres of timber. Sometime in roughly 1993 or 1994 was the first time I'd heard about the Lady in the Woods. I was in fifth grade, hanging out with some other boys in the grade school grounds. The story is just your typical ghost story. At Mill Park, our local hangout just blocks away, a child went missing after the sighting of a ghost, more specifically the ghost of a woman dressed in all white. They didn't know the name of the child, but claimed it happened in 1987. Another boy chimed in. There was also an adult who went missing. The night after a sighting of the same ghost, and a few years later, in both cases, the sighting happened after the park was closed, well after midnight. The park is nestled in between two neighborhoods, and there have been even reports of people who have moved out of their homes after seeing the woman drifting through the woods. There were other stories I heard in the years after that included witchcraft, Satan worshiping, kidnapping, murder, and the occult. The story gained more momentum when another boy in our class, a few months later, found a pentagram spray-painted on a tree on the path near the park. We actually rode our bikes out to see it. It was definitely there, crudely painted in what looked like a real hurry. It was one of those things where there was no real way to know if the pentagram was part of the story, or was put there because of the story. When you're in fifth grade, you rarely stop to think these things through. You only see what's in front of you. And what I was seeing was definitely creepy. In May of 1995, a friend of ours named Michael lived only a block away from Mill Park. His parents decided to allow him to have a sleepover for his birthday party. He invited 10 of us boys to stay the night, just doing what boys do. God bless those parents, by the way. That night, you can imagine where this thing headed. Michael knew all the Mill Park ghost stories. He lived the closest of all of us and had a neighbor who gave him all kinds of crazy information, or so he claimed. He rehashed a lot of the stories we had already heard, and even added a few others. After some time, and as the clock made its way near 1 a.m., it finally happened. One of the boys suggested we sneak out, see if we could find this lady ghost. So that's exactly what we did. We all made it outside, quiet enough, and made our way to Mill Park. Once we made it to Mill Park, we broke up into groups. A few walking on the overgrown Little League baseball field. A few headed towards the playground equipment near the only streetlight in the park. Myself and others stayed in the parking lot nearest to Michael's house. Yes, we were the skittish ones. I wish I could give you all kinds of cool things we did, but in life, in real life, it's not that cool. Essentially, we just kind of walked around, looking, waiting. Really, we had only been there for maybe 15-20 minutes when it happened. I kid you not, just like the story, within minutes of showing up, it was like a Lifetime movie. There she was, in the woods, to my north. I see what looks like a pale white woman, white hair, white flowing clothes, and white pants. In the night, she looked to glow. It was literally the perfect example of what you think of as a ghost. I have never been so scared in my entire life. To this day, it is still the most terrifying moment I've ever been in. That includes an automobile accident. Everyone saw her, all 10 of us. She stuck out like a sore thumb. We jetted. I mean, we ran faster than any of us had ever ran before. All of us completely silent, moving at our fastest rate towards Michael's home and safety. I could embellish here and tell you that she chased us or made a move towards us. I could make it out like her head split in half and bees came flying out. But none of that happened. In fact, she was facing a different way entirely. I don't believe the ghost lady even knew we were there. She looked she was simply peering deeper into the woods, as opposed to staring out to frighten little boys running away, terrified. That was that. We all make it back safely. We spend the rest of the night worried this lady ghost was going to show up and kidnap us. She never showed up. We return to school, and the lady in the woods becomes legend. All of us share the story. All of us back each other up. We even told one of our teachers. She politely listened and then changed the subject. It was the coolest, most terrifying thing that had ever happened to us. We had one of the best campfire ghost stories in history. So time passes like it always does. We move on from grade school to junior high, then to graduating high school. Once we got a little older, the story took a backseat to girls and just living life. I wouldn't say the story died. I know we spoke of it in passing. I know the story continued on in the grade school, at least for a short period after we left. One of the 10 boys from the birthday party died of suicide shortly after high school. And it took everything in me not to blame this ghost story on that situation. I don't believe the two are related. We all move on to college. I lose touch with all but one of the 10, though a few I have on Facebook. 2010. After coming home from college and struggling to find my way in life, I finally start to get my act together. I find a full-time job, married my now wife, got a dog, and had a couple of kids. Eventually, we purchased our first home, which so happens to be just blocks from my childhood house. I ended up in a tiny little house two streets over from Mel Park. After those floating years, I ended up back where it all started. On my days off, I walk my dog in the park where the lady of the woods scared me almost to death. This is where you really start to question yourself and your senses. At 27 years old, I would stare at that location where I saw the lady glowing all those years prior and try to make sense of it all. Now, older and wiser, you spend a lot more time trying to feel things out rather than just reacting. How in the world did I see a ghost in sixth grade and 9 other people who all saw the same thing? I know it wasn't a dream. How could we be collectively dreaming? I know it wasn't imagination. It was really there. What I saw was real, but your brain has a funny way of making things fuzzy. It's hard to explain, but you start to question everything. You know it's real, but you know it's not. That sentence shouldn't be, but that's just how my mind would read the situation. It really was something that I wrestled with a bit, just trying to figure it all out. In the summer of 2012, there I am, on another walk with my dog, coming up alongside the timber where I saw the lady in the woods all those years ago. I'm thinking of her again, thinking of my childhood friend, and wondering if they ever think of that moment like I do. That thought passes as I move along the path that leads me out of the park. In front of me, a large trailer hooked up to the middle sits in the driveway nearest to the park's wooded area. There's a middle-aged man moving some things into the trailer as I approach. He sees me and says hello. I say hello back, and then decided to make small talk. I ask him if he's moving. The man responds that he just recently sold his home. It was his parents' house, and it had sold to a young couple. Closing was coming up shortly. I mentioned a few other things and started to head off. But I stop, because that ghost story was on my mind. I decided to ask a man I didn't know if he knew the story. Why I did that is beyond me. It's definitely not something I would have normally brought up in conversation. But this house was the closest one to the sighting, and I just needed confirmation that somebody else out there still knew the story. I don't remember exactly what I said, but I basically asked him if he had ever heard the ghost stories. I'll never, in my remaining years, forget what happened next. The man looks at me and smiles. He tells me he's heard plenty of those stories. I'm actually relieved he had, because I didn't actually think through how the conversation would go if he had no clue what I was talking about. I then proceed to give him the shortened version of the story you just read above. He listened, and I could tell he was interested. When finished, he takes a moment and responds. I used to live in this house before the park was built. My parents raised me here. I moved out in 1983 or 84. I believe the park was built somewhere between 84 and 86. And my parents have been there ever since. My dad passed away in 91, and it was just my mom after that. The ghost you saw, that was my mom. I looked at him completely confused. He continues. My mom had some medical issues that started in the mid-80s and continued all the way up until she passed away this last spring. The medicine they had her on would cause her to sleepwalk. I can't even count the amount of times I received calls in the middle of the night from the police department advising me that they had found my mother wandering around the park. I was told recently one of the neighbors moved out because they were tired of all the commotion. My sister lives in Texas. I can never get it through her thick skull that our mom needed to be moved to an assisted living. So this went on for years, and I found out from some friends that she had become a ghost story to the park. You see, my mom had a favorite robe that was all white and always slept in the same pearl silk pajamas. Everything was white. She even had white gloves. She would put on from time to time. I can only imagine what that would look like in the middle of the night. That lamp there over the playground would light her up like a Christmas tree. So it was never hard for police to locate her. So you see, that ghost you saw, that was just my mom sleepwalking, probably. I bet I even got a call that night. I'm speechless. The lady in the woods was real. She wasn't a ghost. She wasn't a dream. She was simply a woman. She was this man's mother, lonely and suffering from some medical condition that had her wandering the woods at night. I only wish I knew more. I never saw that man again. The new couple moved in, probably oblivious to the ghost story its previous occupant had created. So, I wonder, does her legend live on? Is there some fifth graders right now hearing the story for the first time of the lady in the woods? How she appears and kidnaps children? How there is a witch who murders those who see her in the middle of the night? 2021. I've just moved from that tiny house into a new, bigger house in the city. I no longer visit Mel Park. I never did learn the lady's name, and I always kick myself for not asking the man more questions. The thing that I find so interesting is how a story can become what it is, how one event story can impact individuals like it did me. I still think of that lady all the time. When a story rolls out that seems impossible, the lady in the woods comes to my mind. Sometimes the story is real, but the context is muddled. This single event impacted my approach to everything. I listen, I take in all of the story I can, and even if it seems impossible, I hold my tongue. Maybe it is impossible, or maybe it's just being interpreted wrong. Thanks for reading. That was an awesome story by Chaos DH, The Lady in the Woods.